military units have crossed the pale, Senator, the risen general said. Then why is the Great Forum surrounded? The expansionist demanded. For the protection of the Senate, the Emperor nearly shouted. The Plague Man had never seen the Sovereign so incensed. He seemed unaffected by whatever had crippled his apparatus, though he had lost his usual boundless reserve of calm. The biosuit's optics had always revealed the Emperor's physiology to be more animated than an ordinary Risen, but now they showed a heat in his face almost as intense as a living man's. Protection, the expansionist sputtered. The Senate is surrounded, its contact with the rest of the capital cut off. This is nothing but bold intimidation. I assure you, Senator, no military units shall cross the Pale, the dead general said flatly. Not without due order by this council. There'll be civil war if they do, Axe Milk said, and all of us will lose everything. The Plague Man raised his eyebrows. That much was true. The Empire was perpetually balanced on a knife's edge between grey and pink, the dead and the living, military and economic power. The military forces stationed on Home were as carefully equilibrated as the rest of the fragile mechanism, with units hailing from pink worlds and grey. Any military move against the Senate would be met with an equal counterforce. A disaster. Please, let us calm ourselves, Henders insisted, obviously flustered at his fellow Senator's abuse of the Sovereign. Sire, what is this attack you speak of? The Emperor nodded, visibly working to calm himself. Of course, we must explain. No doubt events today may have seemed precipitous, but we are sure that once you've heard the facts, you will understand our actions. The pink senators and Milk responded with stony silence. The risen general leaned forward, gesturing to bring an image of Nara Oxum onto the central air screen. The Plague Man recognized it from her trial, clipped from the news feed of only an hour before. Councillors, during the trial of Senator Nara Oxum, we discovered that a neural virus was being transmitted from the Senate floor. The virus used the news feed as a carrier wave, instantly affecting a small but vulnerable portion of the capital's populace. The virus caused nausea, seizures, paralysis. We believe that the effect would have spread to the entire population had the broadcast continued. Fortunately, the apparatus acted quickly, shutting off the attack at its source. The council chamber was silent as those assembled digested the general's words. The Plague Man quietly searched the database within his biosuit. He found references to visual stimuli that could cause seizures, but only to a small percentage of human beings, most often children, and nothing that could be hidden inside a normal news feed. This was an unprecedented weapon if the general's words were true. This sounds incredible, the Utopian said. Nothing but a pretext for silencing Senator Oxum. He turned toward the Plague Man and Milk. We heard more than you did before we were summoned away. After the news feed was cut, Oxum accused the Emperor of murdering his sister, and she claims that the symbiont's immortality is a lie. Incredible stories seem to abound today, the Emperor said. If Oxum is lying, then why concoct this story to cut her off? The expansionist senator countered. The palace had nothing to do with the decision, the Emperor said. As I said, the media monitors found themselves under attack, in great pain. They acted in self-preservation. That much may be true, the plagueman said quietly. Oxum's words seem to have affected the apparatus in particular. The Emperor started, then fixed the Axis representative with a glare. It was rare for the representative to speak at all, and the Sovereign had counted the Axis as an ally throughout the war, especially since the vote on the Legius genocide. That may be, the dead admiral said. We don't understand exactly how the virus works or who is susceptible, but we suspect who is behind it. And that would be, the Utopian said. Oxum, and perhaps some elements of the Secularist Party, the general said. You have proof of this, Axe Milk demanded. Give us Oxum and we'll get the proof, the Emperor said. This is utterly transparent, the Utopian said flatly. The Plague Man remained silent as the argument raged, biding his time. The members of the War Council would soon lose all civility, but that hardly mattered. The details of whatever Oxum had discovered were, in their way, unimportant as well. This drama would ultimately be played out in other venues. The pressures that had been too long restrained in the Empire would shortly be released, violently and disruptively. That much was obvious. The Axis had seen this coming for a long time. It had failed in its mission to stabilize the 80 worlds. The Ricks, with their blockade, their wars, had finally won. But the plague man was glad that the Emperor's desperate gamble would allow him one last act of penance here on the council. It was clear that the sovereign would call for a vote, thinking he had 5 among the 8 councillors in his pocket, believing that under cover of the war council, he could move against Oxen, perhaps ultimately against the Senate, and keep the whole unwieldy contraption of the Empire clanking along for a few more decades. I shall repay you, Nara Oxen, the plague man thought to himself. Not just with this vote to save her, but with all it would bring. As much chaos, progress, and the old enemy death as she and her party could ever want. God is change, he muttered to himself. Captain. Lawrence I looked down upon the object. At this point in the Lynx's slow rotation, its dark bulk was beneath his feet, barely discernible through the observation blister's high-impact plastic. Its shape had grown ever more difficult to make out as the Legius sun receded. Now the object was merely an absence of stars, a giant lump of coal blackening one quarter of the universe. The Lynx was still studiously avoiding communication with the thing. The frigate's mass detectors were the only sensors trained on its position. Mass was the one aspect of itself the object couldn't modulate, and thus used to signal the Lynx. Xi felt safer this way, cut off from the mind. One of Alexander's secrets had already brought the Empire to the brink of civil war. Now, the only means of contact with the mind was through the slender connection it had established with Herd. The Rixwoman spoke for it like some ancient oracle, as expressionless and miraculous as a bleeding statue, an intermediary with the deity. But Xi knew that this prophylaxis couldn't be maintained forever. The object was too tenacious and resourceful, too capable of unanticipated configurations. And the Lynx was too porous. It was fundamentally a scout ship designed to gather information in 1,000 ways. The object would get in sooner or later, would reach Xi's crew just as it had reached Herd. He would have to tell them. The crew knew that Xi had disarmed the politicals on board, so they would eventually have to know about the Emperor's secret and the coming civil war. Their native worlds would be thrown into chaos soon. Xi and his lover had lit a match that would consume millions of lives. Laurent watched Holmes' bright star rise slowly on his left, still 2 subjective years away, and wondered what was going on at the Forum. Nara would have made her speech a few hours ago, threatening 1,600 years of stability. The apparatus's reaction would be swift and desperate, but Nara Oxen was a senator, and would not be easily silenced. Laurent Xi had burned 7% of the Lynx's entanglement reserve trying to keep track of the developments, and he knew that the Empire was already shaking. If the signs were to be believed, the Emperor had acted directly against the Senate. Xi hoped that the other messages he had sent, warnings to old colleagues and confidants within the military, would help Nara come through this unharmed. She and the Senate would certainly need allies to survive the next months. But in the long term, Xi believed, victory would be theirs. The apparatus would do what it could to forestall the spread of the secret, but their efforts could only be stopgap. The data on pilgrimages were public. Once examined, rumors would turn swiftly into accepted fact, and the secret revealed would strain even the greatest loyalty. Few religions could withstand the news that heaven was, in fact, a lie. Temporary. Xi wondered what had led the Emperor down this path. 500 extra years of life was hardly a trivial boon. Presumably, the Sovereign had simply been mistaken at first, thinking that the symbiont was permanently stable, and a religion had been built on the concept that the old enemy had been beaten. When the first signs of the error had been detected, perhaps it had been too late for such a massive revision in Scripture. Well, a revision was coming now. If the Sovereign chose to fight, the Empire might remain divided for a long time. The apparatus could easily keep a few warships, perhaps even a majority of the fleet, in the dark for years. Vessels could be ordered into deep cover for decades, receiving only censored information from the outside universe. But slowly the truth would chip away at the loyalists, the conditioned, the willfully blind. Though some of the military would certainly remain loyal to the Emperor regardless of his lies, the 80 worlds would turn against him one by one. And what would follow this civil war? A republic? A new sovereign? It might take decades to resolve the question of succession. The Lynx's problem was more immediate, however. As Nara had warned, the vessels pursuing them were under orders to destroy the object, Xi, and his ship. One had to assume that they'd been under deep cover from the start of their mission, and Imperial writs were difficult code to subvert. In a few years absolute, They would be closing with the Lynx, their velocities almost matched. With the extra mass of the object in tow, the frigate could not outrun them. Outnumbered, with a half-untrained crew and an imperfectly repaired ship, Zai would have to fight again. He needed an ally, and he was alone in deep space. All he had was the object. He reached down toward the absence below him, looked at his gloved hand against the absolute blackness of the thing. He pulled off the glove and gazed upon the smooth metal of his hand. If the Ricks were at long last arriving in the Empire, they had begun with the right man. Lawrence Zai knew what it was to be half-machine. And he wanted to return to home. That was all that mattered. That was what had moved him from the start. Now that everything else, honor, tradition, sovereign, and immortality itself, was stripped away, he had love to return to. Nara. Bridge! Captain? Hobbs's voice came. Assemble the senior staff in 1 hour. Yes, sir. Command, Bridge? As good a place as any. Any prep, Captain? Consider contact with the object, Hobbs, an alliance of convenience with the Ricks. Consider how to fight a guerrilla war in a crumbling empire. Consider how best to explain to our crew that death is final and that we all may die soon. There was a pause, but not a long one. On it, sir. Senator. The four officers entered the great forum slowly, as warily as a pack of predators trespassing in another's territory. They clearly didn't want to be here, committing this transgression. The rows of white-clad senators watched the four descend the steps toward the dais. A murmur rose up, a sound halfway between defiance and fear. Nara Oxum felt the two emotions collide and mix, creating a strange discomfort that was almost like embarrassment. In their black uniforms, one might have mistaken the officers as guests arriving at a ball wearing tragically confused dress, fantastical masks at a white tie function. But then the fear grew, displacing everything else. These four had thousands of soldiers under their command who surrounded the forum even now, dozens of ships in the skies above. President, the most senior officer said, nodding a small bow. Drexler looked down upon the four with undisguised anger. You have broken the covenant, Admiral. Would you destroy the Empire? The woman looked surprised. With the forum infrastructure down, Oxum had no prompts, but Nara recognized her from official parties. It was Admiral Rensa Fowler IX. She had been on home for some time and had aged the last 10 years at full absolute. We are unarmed, President Drexler. We meant no violation of the Pale. The old man scowled. No Imperial soldier has ever come inside the forum before, Admiral, and your troops threaten us even now. These are strange times, President, she said simply, as if in somber agreement. The four of us wish to speak in private with you, but the secure lines crossing the Pale seem to be in disrepair. The forum reverberated with a hissing sound, the word disrepair spoken with contempt. Against the feigned politesse of the Admiral, defiance reasserted itself. The hard lines were deliberately destroyed, the President said coldly. Admiral Fowler nodded. That would seem likely. Do you claim this was not the military's doing? She shrugged. We aren't certain. We suspect the apparatus is responsible. In any case, we four do not represent the military per se. Confusion filled the great forum now. Nara could read nothing useful from the officers. They were soldiers on a mission, hard-minded, determined not to consider the greater implications of their actions. Whatever Fowler's claims, the four were following orders. You carry a writ from the Emperor himself? Drexler asked. Fowler shook her head. We don't represent the Emperor either. Can we speak in private, President? The Senate is in session, Admiral. We are conducting a trial. Fowler looked about the hall, begrudgingly recognizing the hundreds of senators surrounding her. She sighed and turned to address them all. Two of us are here to speak for the home fleet and certain ships of the High Fleet. My own flag vessel for one, she indicated the men on her left. And these fine officers represent ground units of the Capital Guard and Home Reserve, but not much of the latter, I fear. Nara Oxum swallowed. The military was divided. Drexler raised his eyebrows. The situation is complicated, then, in terms of your chain of command. Admiral Fowler nodded slowly. She glanced nervously around the forum as if wishing again for a smaller audience. Then she shifted her weight, looked at the grey marble floor, and spoke carefully. Yes, but perhaps you could clarify matters for us, President Drexler. Due to the communications situation, the War Council has rendered an incomplete vote on an issue of great importance. An incomplete vote? 8 members have voted president, and the result is a 4-4 tie. Certain members of the military command structure insist that the Emperor's vote should break the tie, as per tradition when the Council is not at full strength. The Admiral cleared her throat. But others of us would prefer to wait for the vote of the 9th member of the Council, given the importance of the issue. Should she be available? For the first time, the Admiral looked at Oxum. Nara could read nothing in the woman's expression. Fowler's mind was clean, as if she were a disinterested, slightly bored observer at some hoary political convention. What is this issue? Oxum asked. The Admiral spoke officiously. The Council has voted, partly voted, on an order to the Capital Guard. The order is to suspend temporarily the normal operations of the Senate, to arrest Senator Oxum and turn her over to the apparatus. To cross the Pale? Drexler hissed. Admiral Fowler nodded. That exceptional action was explicitly dictated. Drexler's face darkened. Thus, in a manner of speaking, we four are authorized to be here, President, the Admiral continued, by partial vote of the Council. But, being on this side of the Pale, we discover the 9th member of the Council. The woman bowed to Oxum. Finally, emotion finally surged from all four of them to reach her empathy. Strong effect focused directly on her. Should she be available? President Drexler spoke carefully, joining the Admiral's dance of words. Senator Oxum's membership in the War Council has been suspended, as you may know, pending the result of this trial. He looked down from the dais at Oxum, raising one eyebrow. For a moment, Nara wondered if this was a charade, all a trick. Her empathy was mostly suppressed. She couldn't feel the emotional reality of the situation. The confusion of the divided city raged around her, but the emotions of these officers were too subtle to read. But one thing was certain. Nara had to act. 4-4, she thought. The Plague Axis had made good on their promise, and now she could break the tie. President Drexler, I rest my defense and call for a vote on my expulsion. The young secularist who had replaced her as party whip rose. I second the call. A fast vote, if the president pleases. Purim Drexler's gavel thundered. Senators, you have 50 seconds. Vote by standard gestural code. A few objections were raised from the shocked loyalist benches, but Drexler gaveled them into silence. The Senate was stunned for a few moments, but then votes began to tally. Oxum almost failed to cast her own, forgetting that she had never been officially removed as His Majesty's representative from Vasthold, Senator of the Empire, and that she had every right. The Senate voted. Half a minute later, it was over. Even a sizable number of loyalists, whether from confusion, the realization that defeat was certain, or a final faithfulness to traditions even older than the Emperor, voted with the majority. Nara Oxum had been overwhelmingly acquitted of treason. The motion for her expulsion had failed. The suddenness of it all left her empty inside. Relief would take a long time to come. Senator Nara Oxum is returned to full status and duties, without prejudice or delay, President Drexler announced. The old man turned to the officers. She is available, Admiral, he finished. They turned to her. Senator, we await the final vote of the War Council. Still stunned at the speed of events, Nara gathered herself. Enough of the military had dared to forestall the Emperor. Drexler had supported them. The Senate had acted quickly and true. All that was left was for her to finish the job. Again, it all came down to a word. I vote against the proposal, Admiral, she said quietly. Thank you for the clarification, Fowler answered. She turned to face the Senate. We apologize for this intrusion. Certain elements under our command will remain, outside the Pale, to render technical assistance and all necessary protection to the Senate. That is acceptable. Drexler said. Death spare the Senate, Fowler said. Death spare the Senate, came the murmured response of the assembly. Three of the officers turned and strode from the forum, hurrying back to the Pale and the military infrastructure, where they could give orders to their troops and ships. But one of the Navy men stayed behind and took a step toward her. Senator Oxum. Yes, Commodore, she asked, reading his rank. My name is Marcus Fentu Masrui. She blinked, recognizing the name. Masrui had been Zai's commanding officer on Dantu. In fact, she'd come close to meeting the man on the night she'd met Laurent 10 years ago. Is it true, Senator? The officer asked. What, Commodore? That the Emperor wanted to kill Laurent Zai, after everything. She nodded. Absolutely true. I heard him say the words. And that there is no immortality? Yes, it's all true, Commodore. Laurent himself told me. The Commodore shook his head ruefully. If any man deserved to live forever, it was Zai, he said. She felt it then, the emotion the officers had hidden so well. It burst from behind Masrui's discipline, from behind his decades of training and loyalty. The prize they'd all been promised, the Valhalla where their dead comrades had gone for rewards eternal, the very reason many of them had joined the military, all of it was a lie. The man's face wrenched as if he were swallowing something awful. Then he took a deep breath and focus returned to his thoughts. And another thing, begging your pardon. Yes, Commodore. Masrui bit his lower lip before speaking. Were you and Zai really lovers? Yes, Commodore, we are lovers. For a moment his face was blank, then he grasped her hand. Thank you, he said. Lara found herself speechless for a moment, then she pulled her hand from his. No thanks necessary, Commodore. It was never pity.
Of course not, Senator.
I didn't mean to imply pity. Thank you, though. All of us wanted somehow to restore Zai. He lost too much on Dantu. After the Legis rescue failed, we thought the Emperor's pardon was real.
It wasn't.
He swallowed, the bitter taste of another lie showing on his face. Commodore, tell me something, Oxum said.
At your service, Senator.
Are there enough of you? Enough to fight those who will follow the Emperor without question?
Not yet, but there will be. The truth will turn them.
He looked up at his departing comrades, realizing that he should join them and put this revolution, this righteous treason, this civil war into motion. But he turned back to Nara.
Laurent Zai's name will turn them, he said.
And death? Nara added.
Death, Senator?
Death is real again, Commodore. Remind them of that.
Commodore Masrui thought about this for a moment, then shook his head. It was always real, Senator, for us soldiers. Death out in space rarely left enough for the symbiont. But I suppose that now death is unavoidable, as it always was before the Emperor's lie.
Spread the word, then, Nara Oxum said. We're free again. Fisherman Pilot.
After a long time, the sun and moon stopped wheeling in the sky. The tides were over. The fisherman looked down at himself. Somehow, he was still here, still whole, after having been consumed 1,000,000 times. The fish were placid now, half in the tide pool, half in the bay. But no, there were more of them, in the sky. The dark night seemed to have filled with stars, as if he'd jumped 10,000 light-years closer to the core. But what looked like stars were in fact the little luminescent fish, strewn across the sky to make a galaxy, a milky river of light. The fisherman's thoughts grew clearer, and he understood what had pacified the ravenous schools. They had reached their goal, resplendent and sovereign in the dark. They were up there, beyond the reach of his spear. He dropped the weapon and turned toward the opening sky. Master Pilot Joachim Marx's gummy eyes focused first on the scarred woman. Her face was blank, as if nerve damage had rendered it expressionless. The hair had been burned from her scalp, but the woman's gaze was bright and intelligent. And violet, her eyes as bright a hue as stained glass catching the sun. Had he been captured by the Ricks?
Marx started, trying to sit up. The scarred woman moved away with the suddenness of a bird cocking its head. He knew from that movement that she was not human.
Who?
Marx began, then he saw Hobbs over the woman's shoulder. Joachim, the exo said. She articulated the two syllables carefully, as if to establish whether he knew his own name. He did her one better.
How are you, Kathery Hobbs?
She smiled.
Relieved. How long?
A month.
Godspite.
To Marx it had seemed like an eternity, but the memory was already fading when contrasted to the real world. He looked around and recognized the room as a private sickbay cabin aboard the Lynx. The violet-eyed Ricks had moved to the side of a small, grey-faced woman. One of the honored dead? This was too confusing.
Why is there a Ricks woman here, Hobbs? Have we been captured?
No, Master Pilot. She is a guest. Or an ally, perhaps. Hobbs sounded only slightly less confused than Marx. She helped cure you, the exo added with surety. He looked at the violet-eyed woman, blinked.
Thank you, then, I suppose.
The woman's gaze remained both piercing and empty, as if he were a specimen pinned in a curio case. How do you feel, Marx? Hobbs asked. He sat up. His muscles had the even tone of artificial exercise. His fingers, chronically suffering mild soreness from the demands of piloting, felt rejuvenated from the enforced break. His head was
different.
End of side 7. To continue, turn the cassette over. Side 8, The Killing of Worlds by Scott Westerfeld. Continuing on page 328.
What happened, Hobbs?
Everything. That was Hobbs, concise but not always helpful. The passage of weeks must have refreshed his brain, Marx thought. He could see the executive officer's stunning beauty again, as he had before growing accustomed to it over the last 2 years. As if he'd spent a month on leave rather than in a coma. You were caught in an upload, Joachim, she said. Alexander, the Legis compound mind, I should say, was transferring itself from the planet to the object. You got in the way.
The object. That word brought a shiver to Marx.
Images swirled in his head, a kind of liquid creature below him, its pseudopods reaching out like those legend members to which a sea creature delegates its kills. Marx recognized from his own discomfort that he was nearing his last memories from before the onset of coma. He'd been taken prey. Your sensor subdrones were pumping everything they could directly into your synesthesia, Hobbs continued. The information gain was too high for you, and perhaps it was partly my fault, too, Joachim. You'd been pulled out of a hypersleep cycle, out of phase, less than an hour before you were hit with the compound mind. Your mind was vulnerable. He looked up at Hobbs, silently begging her to talk more slowly.
What hit me?
Alexander, the Legis compound mind. You had a planet stuffed into your head. Marx nodded and rubbed his aching temples. That metaphor felt about right. Then he blinked. He hoped it was a metaphor.
Again, Hobbs, he pleaded. Why is there a Ricks woman running loose on our ship?
Ah, Hobbs said. She's a commando from the Legis attack.
Oh, a commando. Understandable, then, that we would want her in sickbay.
Marx vaguely realized that he should be terrified as if a poisonous snake had been dropped in his lap, but his body wasn't up to producing adrenaline. Things have changed, Marx. Not just here, but throughout the Empire. We've had to ally ourselves, or at least cooperate, with the object, with the Ricks.
The Empire and Ricks are allied?
Suddenly, 3 months' sleep didn't seem adequate.
No, just us, Marx. The Lynx is on its own. Wait, the Master Pilot interrupted. Who's in command, Hobbs?
He clenched his fists. Had the aborted mutiny finally occurred?
Captain Zai, of course.
Marx's head swam. The Vaden had committed treason?
Listen, Marx,
Hobbs kept at him. The Emperor's status is unsure. The dead have called a quorum. The pilgrimage ships are coming into home from all over the Empire. The Sovereign may be removed. A quorum of the dead? Something from a 10-year-old civics class. A strictly theoretical possibility. For 1600...